some work that I have been doing in this area. So mostly based on some work I did with a former graduate student of mine, Alberto Faraggi, and then something more recently with a colleague of mine and Wu Zhong. So here's the outline of what I want to basically go over. So I will give you some very brief introduction to have BPS Wilson loops in N equal 4. This is sort of obviously the main hero of the talk. And then I will remind you, in case you were not born scientifically at this time, but so there's a very nice example, which is the Wilson loop in the fundamental representation. And I'm going to remind you that there's a problem with this, despite many efforts. So then I will go to the higher representations, which I think give you the advantage of having an extra knob to try to test what's going on beyond the leading order. I will then describe this, how this problem is tackled on the gravity side, so the holographic description, how to get one loop corrections there, and then I will show you the comparison, and I will conclude and mention some other problems. As you can see, this is not a talk that finished with a bang. So this is something like work in progress. So some things are working, some things are not working. But I think the story is useful. The story will teach us ultimately how to carefully do loop corrections in holography, okay? Which we don't necessarily do all that well, even in this very simple example. So again, my goal is to show you a very simple story that has no clear end right now, but that should help us understand a little better how to do ADS-CFT in this context. Okay, so here's the, as I said, the hero of the story, which is the Wilson loop. The Wilson loop is characterized by some contour and some representation. Here's the object. This is a very important object. If you think about it as an on-local operator, in the language of Polyakov and Migdal, it is the generating function of all gauge invariant operators. So it's you can reformulate your whole gauge theory in this language. Practically, it is the other parameter of confinement, and so it's very useful in that sense. And the story that I want to go into is very similar to what happens in QCD. So in QCD, you compute the potential, and you get linear potential. So quarks are bound to anti-quarks. Nothing can escape there. But then you can compute quantum corrections. So the string is a classical object, and then it vibrates. And these classical corrections are known as the Luscher term. They can be computed in the lattice very precisely, but they are really quantum corrections. So this is essentially what I want to tackle in the context of N equal 4. So I want to, I understand already the leading term, and I'm interested in this quantum correction, similar to the Luscher term in QCD, okay? Good, so let me briefly remind you the story of this field. So the identification of N equal 4 Wilson loop in the fundamental representation was one of the first things that was done right after the ADS-CFT. So you can see it's 9803. So I think this is the first paper that Juan wrote after the conjecture. And then there's a simultaneous paper by Ray and Yi. So Drucker and Fjoll, so that was in 98. Then there was further, Drucker and Fjoll understood that the D3 brain, a particular configuration over which I will go, captures very nicely the leading order of multiply wrapped Wilson loop. Okay, so then a similar story was developed for the anti-symmetric. So the D5 brain in this case seems to be the object that that corresponds to the to the Wilson loop in the total anti-symmetric representation. But as so, it's nice to give a talk here because Jaume is in the audience, and this slide was prepared a long time ago, so it's not a so Jaume and Passerini essentially clarify how to map these objects, how to understand them from the point of view of the holography, starting by taking the decoupling limit in intersecting brains, etc. But the dictionary, this is essentially the dictionary, the page that connects gravity configurations to different representations of the Wilson loop. So the fundamental Wilson loop is described by this fundamental string, and this is what Juan and Suyun Ray and Yi did. The symmetric representation is described by D3 brains. So again, a particular classical configuration over which I will go, and then antisymmetric representations are captured by a DeFi brain with some flux. Okay, so it's still introduction. So according to this dictionary, as I said, a K-symmetric, now I'm saying what was in the table, but a little bit more mathematically precise. So the K-symmetric representation of SUN, the Wilson loop in that representation, is dual to a single D3 brain with K units of fundamental flux. There are other subtleties about how many, how this K has to scale with M, but for now, I will not go into that, okay? So in the prop approximation, where we can trust the DBI action, this K is order N, and then the D3 has a ADS2 cross S2 geometry, or word volume geometry, with K units of flux. And this is the configuration that was described by Drucker and Fjell. So one important aspect of all this story, which I will very briefly touch upon, is the fact that from the field theory point of view, this problem is in principle solved. So the problem of computing expectation value of these Wilson loops in the representations that I'm interested reduces to a Gaussian matrix model. So this was conjectured by Drucker and Gross and Erickson, Semenov, and Sorembo also around 2000. And it was proven by Peston using localization. But I will very briefly mention this or go over this. Good. So what I want to discuss in this talk is essentially, I want to, as I said, I want to go beyond the leading classical agreement, and I want to explore the semi-classical. So I have to find, I have to go on the gravity side, on the deep brain side, and compute the corresponding one loop determinants. So here's essentially a conclusion, or roughly some sort of conclusion. So we find functional agreement for the higher representations. As I said, my knob is this K, the rank of the representation. As a function of K, we find functional agreement. So the functions that appear in the gravity side and the functions that appear on the field theory side match, but their coefficients do not match. So there are some numerical discrepancies, okay? So, and again, I want to, I view this as some, of course, it's not that that anybody doubts ADS-CFT, it's not that we're going to find some discrepancy by doing a calculation on the gravity side, but it's essentially some way to tell us where we are not doing something completely right and that we need to fix. So this is this sort of idea of high precision. So we have an exact answer on the field theory side, and we want to understand gravity well enough to reproduce that answer, okay? Okay, so have BBS Wilson loop. So again, the Wilson loop, you can think of it as coupling your gauge theory to an external prop, coupling this multiplet, and then again, the curve give me the contour of the Wilson loop, and then I have a representation. We're going to consider, in this case, bosonic. So supersymmetry forces a particular form of this contour, so it has to be a straight line or a circle, which is a conformal transformation of a straight line. But essentially, this is the Wilson loop in n equal 4, the one that preserves supersymmetry. Okay, so here's the argument of localization. This is this is just a cartoon. So we want to compute this expectation value. What we do is we deform it by some Q exact operator, and then if this partition function is independent of T, oops. What happened?
Unplug the cord and plug it back in.
Okay. I like this fix. Okay, so where were we? Well, I was reminding you of how localization works. So this allows to show that the Wilson loop, which is again the half supersymmetric Wilson loop, can be computed using this trick in n equal 4. Here's the answer. Okay, A is some constant matrix, so that's how we get a Gaussian matrix model. R is the radius of this 4. Good. And so this is a very nice and very clean result, but as I said, for people who have been around for a while, it is very interesting because, so the original intuition of Drucker and Gross and Erickson, Semenov, and Zarembo was based on studying diagrams and realizing that there was cancellation between the propagators, so that you had a constant propagator. And that was sort of a clue that, yes, this must be given by a matrix model. But it was, the whole idea was very, very diagrammatic. And here there's an answer that is completely independent of diagrams in this sense. Okay, so here's the perturbation value for the, again, for the straight Wilson, for the line, is perturbation value is 1. For the circular Wilson loop, it's a non-trivial function of the Hopf coupling. So here's the answer. As I said, you can compute this using matrix model. So here's the full answer for any n. Here I'm taking the large n limit. So there's a 1 over n squared term, but I will not discuss that one here. And then I can even expand it for large lambda, okay? So for large lambda, this is the leading term, and then this would be the sub-leading term, this red. So red usually would be gauge theory, and then let's see what gravity answers to this question. So again, I will not go into a lot of details because, again, this is supposed to be ancient history. But roughly, so now we have a fundamental string with some word volume that is ADS2, and then we look at fluctuation of that embedding. And then we compute the one loop determinant there, and that will give me a correction. As you can see, it doesn't match, okay? And this is clearly not a mistake. So this is a very robust calculation. If you have a string, an ADS2 string, in ADS5 crosses 5, you have your 5 massless modes that come from embedding this surface in the S5. And then you have 3 massive modes that is ADS2 inside ADS3. And these are the fermions, okay? So this is a very, this was actually written by Forste, Goschel, and Tyson already in 99. So Drucker, Gross, and Sailing evaluated this for the first time, but other people have evaluated this same determinant using different methods. So zeta function regularization, Gelfand-Yaglom approach. So many, many approaches have been taken, so it's not a question of a necessarily bad regularization, but here's the answer, and the answer doesn't match. And you can see more or less like every once in a while, 4-6 years, this question come up. So I think that this is a hard problem, okay? So this discrepancy is a hard problem, and it probably has to do with understanding, there's some zero modes on the disk amplitude. So this could be more difficult. And I don't think, well, anyway, so this problem will stay with us for a while longer, but my goal and what I want to convince you is that if I have an extra parameter in my calculation, which is the K that corresponds to higher representation, then I might hope that the same problem with the constant term, the terms that are K independent, I will have, as is in the case of the fundamental string, but other dependence on this K, I will be able to capture. Okay, so this is why I'm doing this. So now I want to, as I said, I want to compute in higher representation. So here's again, this is a little bit not very well organized. I apologize, but I didn't want to redo everything that was done for the fundamental. So so here's my matrix model. It's an A minus matrix. I go into the eigenvalue basis. Of course, here's the van der Mond determinant that I have to include by going to this basis. Now, instead of computing the calculation, instead of doing this calculation right away, a very efficient way to do it, this is Harnor and Kumar discussed this in 2006, is to use this generating function. So for the anti-symmetric representation and for the symmetric representation. And then what you need to do is to read the coefficient of t to the k in this generating function, okay? But good. So here's my matrix model already in the eigenvalue basis. Now I'm going to take Larshan limit. So this is the Wigner summer circle distribution of eigenvalues. And here's the expression that I get. So this integral over dz is essentially the contour integral that I do to take the coefficient of the t to the k term. Okay, that's it. So here's the, okay, so there, this becomes a little bit more, well, anyway. So here's the the contour of integration. So it's C, but I'm going to deform it into this. This one gives a negligible contribution. So I end up with this branch cut, and which I can compute this. So in fact, as I said, there's a one of the collaborators is a very diligent undergrad student from China. This is very straightforward. Anyway, so here's the answer. Okay, so there's the classical piece or the leading term, leading in N, and here's the expression for the one loop correction to the symmetric Wilson loop. So I can of course do the same thing for the anti-symmetric. I will not again torture you with the contour integral, etc. But here's my gauge theory correction to the leading term of the expectation value. Okay, so now, this one I'm going to skip because this is confusing even to me. Okay, so let's discuss how to do this holographically. Okay, so holographically, what I need to do, I have already mentioned many times that for the symmetric representation, I need a D3 brain with this word volume and K units of flux, discussed by Drucker and Field. And here's the action, the Born-Infeld action. As I said, I need to be in the regime where this is the right description and it's k is order n. It cannot be greater. If k is, say, n squared, then I'll have to go to some back-reacted description of this. So, but in the limit that I'm interested or in the regime that I'm interested, this is correct. Let me remind you that the D-brain tension is n, is given by this. So when I'm looking at a D3 brain on ADS5 process 5, there's an L to the fourth that comes from this term. So the Born-Infeld action is proportional to n. So that my h bar is 1 over n. Okay, so the D3 brain really wants to organize the calculation as a 1 over n calculation, which is different from how the string wanted to organize. The string wants to organize 1 over square root of lambda, assuming that you already took n to infinity. So these are subtleties that I think have not been completely worked out, and that's why the reason, I think is some of the reason behind this numerical discrepancy. But let's continue. So here's my metric for ADS5 process 5, my 5-form flux. I'm going to use, or the standard, the simplest way to tackle this problem is by using this form of ADS5. So you want to do this foliation of ADS5 using ADS2, S2, and one direction. Then C4, or the C4 potential is can be written like this with F given by this function. So the solution, as I said, the classical solution is going to essentially be given by being at some point in the radial direction of ADS, so this U, okay? U wants to be fixed at some UK that is given by essentially the flux of the K in the representation. But it's this combination that enters, which I'm going to call kappa. And that's it. So this is the flux, electric flux, and again the strength of the electric flux is given by this K. So here's my metric. As I promised, it's ADS2 crosses 2. Notice that of course at this level you have two radii. So one the radius for ADS2 is L cosh, and the radius for S2 is L sinh. Good. So again, this can also be seen, and this was. There's also an interesting story here, due to Rob largely, that you can think of this as K fundamental string charge dissolved in the D brain. Okay. So let me remind you, or let's go back. In the case of the string, everything was fairly straight, was simpler. So let me remind you of the symmetries. So in this case, I have ADS2 crosses 2. So these are the symmetries of ADS2 crosses 2. They are now realized as isometries of the word volume. S5 is still rotation on S5, around a point on S5. And so this configuration preserves half of the supersymmetries on ADS5. So in fact, this is the supergroup that is preserved by this configuration. The reason I'm doing this is because I want to compare this with the field theory. So in field theory, what I do is I have n equal 4. This is the Susi group of n equal 4, and this is the bosonic subgroup. So the bosonic symmetries that are preserved by the Wilson loop, again, you can think of a straight line. It breaks SO4, 2 to SL2R times SO3 in the following way. So these generators of SO4, 2 are broken, and these are the ones that remain. Now, Jij span SO3, which is as you do, and these three span SL2R. And Y, which was one of the scalar fields in n equal 4, essentially breaks SO6 to SO5. So again, this is the supergroup. So this is essentially to tell me, yes, the symmetries of this configuration in the gravity side match nicely with the symmetries of the configurations in the field theory side. But more importantly, which is what I want to do next, is to show you that not only the symmetries of the configuration, but the fluctuations of the spectrum of all fluctuations that are on top of this classical configuration have to get organized in terms of representation of SP4*4. And this is really what makes me confident that I have done my analysis of fluctuations correctly, because there were some questions about these fluctuations, but if I am able to organize them, in multiples of this supergroup, then I know that I have done the analysis correctly. Okay, so again, there's a small subtlety, because remember there are two half BPS Wilson loop. One is the straight Wilson loop, and the other one is the circular. We're interested in the circle, so that means that this is the ADS2 form that we need to take. I will not. This is a little bit more description of the classical solution. Again, you can evaluate the on-shell action. As I said, this was done a while ago. So for the straight Wilson loop, you get that the expectation value is still 1. For the circular, this is the answer. Okay, which I have more or less shown you from the matrix model point of view. But this is the leading term. This is the n large n limit. Okay, so now what we want to do, or what I want to discuss, is to construct the fluctuations around this solution. These are essentially the same fluctuations of Luscher in the case of QCD, as I have mentioned at the beginning. So there are other kinds of fluctuations that you might worry about, which are fluctuations of the supergravity field. So you have your DBI action, and they're symmetric. There are other fields in there. So those are fluctuations that correspond to closed stream modes. And in the field theory side, they correspond to insertion of chiral primaries in your Wilson loop. And they were discussed to some extent by these three gentlemen here also a while ago. Good. So what I want to do is similar to what I presented to you for the fundamental Wilson loop. I want to compute the spectrum of fluctuations, and then I want to compute the one-loop determinant. And this is something, as I said, that people have done and revisited. So originally, Drucker, Gross-Seidlin, then Martin Kruszenski and Alan Tersuit revisited the question, and more recently, Buchbinder and Seidlin also discussed this one-loop determinants. So here's my bosonic action. Okay, there's also a fermionic part that is due to Martucci, and there are a few papers. Okay, but this is the expression. So what I need to do is to look at for the fermionic is all fluctuations. Here I need to look at my classical part and then the fluctuations around that. So because there's a non-trivial word volume flux, there is a deformed metric. So I mentioned to you that the induced metric had two different radii, right? L cosh and L sinh. But once you account for the fact that you have flux, the deformed metric, the open string excitations, fill this metric. And this metric has the same radii, and of course that had to be the case for supersymmetry, but it's nice to see it very explicitly. Again, just take DBI, expand to quadratic fluctuation, the linear term has to cancel because you're expanding around an equation, a solution to the equation of motion. So here's what you get. So you get six massless scalars and a massless gauge field on ADS2 cross S2 with the same radii. So this is the spectrum of quadratic fluctuations around this classical or symmetric Wilson loop. Okay. And for the fermions, you get just four massless wild fermions on ADS2 cross S2. So this is not what I'm going to do right now, but you can identify this as just an n equal 4 vector multiplet on ADS2 cross S2. But I'm going to do something slightly different because I wanted to check. So I'm going to compactify on S2. This makes it easier for me, or at least it made it easy for me at the beginning to compute so some of these determinants. And in this language, I can compare them with so one thing that wasn't completely clear to me was how to compare the spectrum. So I had some idea, well, anyway. So the fundamental string, we discussed the spectrum. This was what I wrote to you in the determinant, is 5 massless and 3 massive. And for some reason, I was a bit confused when I first got this spectrum. I did not realize right away that it was just n equal 4 vector multiplet. So, but by reducing to ADS to honest 2, then I can try to understand how the spectrum of the D3 generalizes the spectrum of the fundamental string. So this is a little bit off target, but the goal, as I said, the goal of this exercise is to be able to, so these are the KK mods of the multiplets of OSP4*4. And my goal was to make sure that all my fluctuations will fall nicely in this kind of multiplets, and they do. Okay, and then I can also recognize the fundamental string as the ultra short multiplet. Okay, so again, you can see here that there's this vector on S5, which is massless, and so then there are 3 modes on that were massive. So this one is very clear, but I can also organize all the multiplets. Good. So now what we need to do is to compute this one loop determinant. I have all the fluctuations. I know that they are the right fluctuations because they satisfy, they agree with the right SUSY multiplet. So the D-brain picture has to provide, at least for the D3, I already argued that the expansion parameter is really N. So the next term is this S1. This is what I want to compute. I guess I will sketch this very quickly. This is the actual, so some discussion about computing this using Heap kernel, but I will go over this quickly. Okay, so this is what we want to evaluate. Some expansion, the definition. Okay, I'm going to use the function regularization in this language. The determinant, which is what I want to compute, is going to be this expression. And so this space is homogeneous. So I know that the dependence on the radius will come up sort of in this form. And now for the effective function that I'm computing, what I really need to understand is this term. Okay, so this is what we need to compute for ADS2 versus 2. So this is a calculation. This is fairly standard. It has been done by Sen and collaborators in the context of computing the excitations near the horizon of black holes that have ADS2 versus 2 near horizon. So I guess I'm going to skip this. So again, this is just one explicit expression so that you see how these things look, but you can compute, again, this has been done and one can do it very carefully. So here's the Heap kernel for scalar on ADS2, on S2. You have to multiply it and look at the appropriate term. So again, this is scalar vector fermion. Now for the D3 brain, there's an interesting observation that you will not see if you look at it directly in 4 dimensions. So I don't know whether this is a great thing, but this is how I did it. Okay, so if you look at this computation from the 2 ADS2 point of view, or roughly ADS2 point of view, you will see that that essentially the correction to the logarithmic term cancel, and then you get some contribution that comes from 0 modes. But this is, again, this is just the way that I looked at it, but more recently, Buchbinder and Salin look at this calculation, and they just said, okay, I have n equal 4 vector multiplet on ADS2 versus 2. I open Vasilievich or some other review of Heap kernel, and they can compute directly what the answer is for this logarithmic turn in the effective action. And here's the expression. So either way you do it, obviously this is the answer, okay? So you can do essentially the same calculation for the D5 brain. So the D5 brain, the word volume, the classical solution is ADS2 cross S4. Now this S4 is inside S5, and that is why in the antisymmetric representation K is bounded. Okay, but essentially the connection between the flux or the rank of the representation and the angle on the S5. So you can think of this. So for the D3, we have this U that was sort of the position on ADS5. So now for the D5, we have the position on the S5, essentially. And it's this theta k, which is related through this expression. Okay. So again, I will not bore you, but believe me, in this paper with Alberto and Wolfgang, we did what I just told you for the D3, we repeated for the D5. So we computed all the quadratic fluctuations, computed the Higgs kernel, and computed the one-loop determinant. Okay. So here's the answer for the fluctuations. Okay. So again, I will make a comment about what is my H bar parameter now, but here's the answer. So you might be suspicious because there are some not completely covariant couplings like here. So alpha and beta is our coordinates on mu and nu are coordinates on ADS2, and alpha and beta are coordinates on S4. So it looks like this is a non-covariant complicated action that might not be completely correct. But this I know to be correct because I can reduce on S4, and then I have my table of all representations, and these have to fall precisely representations of my supergroup, and it does. So even though it looks very, very funky, it is the right answer, and I can check by reducing to ADS2 and checking that it falls into supermultiplets of my supergroup representation. Okay, so this is the answer, and again, I can use Higgs kernel. I have shown you a few slides of how I can compute Higgs kernels on ADS2. Of course, on S4, I can compute Higgs kernel, and here's the answer. Okay, so as I said, blue is gravity, red will be field theory. So here's the answer. That answer is not, oops. Okay, so now let's compare. So here's the comparison for the K-symmetric. The K-symmetric has the same dependence, but there's a negative sign here. Okay, so this negative sign, can be checked. This negative sign is not an error again. So Arkady had some calculations, and you can check that in some limit it reduces to the right thing. So this is the answer from the D3 brain, and this is the answer for the matrix model. So it looks like there's some discrepancy. So for the antisymmetric, as I said, I spare you the details here, but this is also fairly robust. So here there's a discrepancy again. A discrepancy by a factor of 3. So I emphasize the discrepancy, but of course it's nice to see that at least the functional dependence is correct. Okay, so this is essentially the story. So now we have to, as I said, this is the answer from gravity, and we can compare with the answer for field theory. And now we have this puzzle. So we have to go back and try to understand where the problems are. So of course, gauge theory, we have the exact answer, and we can consider different orders of limit. In principle, we have this expression in terms of polynomial. Of course, for the K-symmetric and K-antisymmetric, it's a lot more complicated. So for the K-antisymmetric, there is some exact answer, but it's some complicated sum of polynomials, and it's not very simple to extract. But what you would like to do is, of course, to try to match this exact answer, expand the exact answer in what gravity is doing. So gravity is a little bit more rigid. So sorry that I jump back and forth, but gravity is more rigid. So in gravity, there's nothing we can do. So the string theory, or at least the fundamental string, has tension square root of lambda, so it wants to organize the expansion in 1/√ λ. So there's not much one can do there. For the D3, I argue by looking at the tension and the dimensionality of the word volume that the expansion is 1/(n). For the D5, it's already complicated because, again, the expansion parameter as dictated by the leading action is 1/(n√ λ). So what one would like to do is to, again, go back to the field theory and say, okay, the calculation that I did using saddle point is not probably the right calculation, because in saddle point, you always take n go to infinity, you take weak net distribution. And that already told you that you went in this plane with n and k and lambda in one specific direction, and then you want to explore. So that is something that needs to be corrected. I am discussing how to correct the weak net distribution. It's not complicated. It's just, it is messy, but it's conceptually clear. But I think that this is one of the key problems. There could be other more complicated problems that I hope they are not, but one needs to check. So this regularization, essentially we regularize separately bosons and fermions. And that could be a problem when we want to match to the matrix model. So maybe something like what I explained here, Gelfand-Yaglong, where you take ratio of determinants is a little better. But in the ADS2, this did not help. But one needs to explore it in the deep brain context. So this is also ongoing. Of course, here I have the extra complication that, because I have to reduce on S2 or on an S4, I have infinitely many, a tower of many, many states. So there's other divergences that one has to understand there. It could also be that the problem is a little bit more subtle. So there were recent work. So again, there's Gershkovich, Gomez, Komogorsky, where you can study how well defined in general partition function on a sphere. And the sphere is compact, and there you can use supergravity, you can use rigid supergravity to understand what are the contour terms, when it's well defined, when it's not well defined. So we do not think that this is the problem in n=4, but it's worth going carefully over that, specifically because of course now we have something that is non-compact. So there could be some even more subtle questions about. Again, we don't think that in n=4 that should be the case, but you're breaking supersymmetry. There could be that there might be some counter terms that we are not accounting for appropriately. But as I said, so this is a talk that ends not with a bang, but with a question mark. But I think it's a nice problem that needs to be explored, and ultimately will tell us how to carefully do this expansion. Okay. Thank you. Examples of?
Loop correction.
Yes. I don't know. So I think, good. So there are some, you have in mind probably these cusp calculations, right? Okay. Right, so I don't know exactly. So in the case of the cusp, you're trying to match a very particular behavior, and so I don't know exactly why these are not matching. I think that in some other cases you're reducing the problem to some specific behavior, and that gives you some extra, like for the cusp in particular. But I don't know exactly what's lacking here. Sorry?
Some of these corrections, like the things that do, is calculated with the same functional dependence, right? It just defines numerical coefficient.
Right. Yes.
So whatever corrections you need, you must preserve the
right. Right.
If you take k equals 1 in the symmetric or the asymmetric case, I mean, it seems that in the symmetric case, the discrepancy was a factor of 3, in the asymmetric case, it was a factor of minus 1.
Yes. Yes.
How does it
good. So you can, yeah, so there's a, you have to be careful there, because, So you assume first that k goes like n, and then, so it's an order of limits. So if you want to keep k equal 1, you can do it. But if you take k to be order n, and then you want to make it smaller, you have to be more careful.